Two college radio DJs during the 90s, hosts Keith and Steve, helped expose bands like Nirvana, Pavement, and PJ Harvey. They went to shows, interviewed musicians, and reviewed albums for various designs and papers. They worked security at concerts and once even did load-in for Phish. Now, they're dads. Whether you want to explore lesser-known music or take a trip down memory lane, tune into the new Dad Rock. Join hosts Keith and Steve as they navigate the ages together, sharing their love of music across various eras and genres. Always well-intentioned, often well-informed, seldom boring, the new Dad Rock will expand your mind.
Welcome to another episode of the new Dad Rock.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about the Frog Brigade.
The Frog Brigade? I thought we were talking about 1977.
Yeah, but that's later. We start off with like what's new or what's happening. Like, you know, we start off like we know each other and we care about each other's lives.
What's happening? So what's new? What's new, Keith? Did you ever see Frog Brigade? I know I texted you the other day and I was like, yo, you should see Frog Brigade.
Yeah, thanks. I don't think I'd seen them before. I've seen Les Claypool and the Holy Mackerel. I think I saw that with you. I saw Primus a few times.
Frog Brigade started back when I lived in San Francisco with you. So
it's
like
2000.
In 2000,
yep.
They had their first go around in San Francisco. And I think they were putting an ad in like The Guardian for like band players.
Oh, really?
And then even back then in 2000, they were playing Pink Floyd Animals in its entirety. That was it was a surprise when they said it after the end of the first set when I saw them back in 2000. But now it's a known thing, and they are touring Pink Floyd Animals.
And I just learned this thanks to you, but their keyboardist is Roger Waters' son.
Yeah, not to mention their guitarist is Sean Lennon, a.k.a. John Lennon and Yoko Ono's son, who he has solo albums under his own name.
Yeah, I remember the one with the orange and white cover that I think was his face. That was probably
Into the Sun, I think it was. Into the Sun, maybe 97.
Yeah, sounds about right, because I think Dolt was out there with me in San Francisco, because I think he listened to it a bunch.
Yeah, that sounds like a music he would like.
Yeah, it's pretty good. The show was awesome. It was at the Fillmore. Like it was 7:30 when you texted me, and I looked online. Tickets were available, so I got a ticket, hopped in an Uber. I got there by 8:30, I was in the door, and they had started at 8:11 apparently. So I missed the first couple songs, though from what I could tell, they were still in the second song, I think. Because they were having setup problems, I believe, because there was a lot of banter for the first, like, I don't know, like it was 10 minutes of talking when I got there. So I think they were having challenges. But then it was pretty good. Then Animals was played, and that was amazing. And then there's a song that everyone went crazy for that looks like it must have been a it was either a Sausage song or a Holy Mackerel song, because that's all they played at the end. It was a good show. There's cool merch. I didn't buy anything. I should have. I knew at the time I was going to regret, but I wasn't going to spend my money on it because I was spending it to go to the show. But it was fun to be able to just choose last minute, get going and go and be gone and be there.
I love the last minute shows. And I saw Frog Brigade also with our friend Brian, who seems to be in every episode now. I want to say it was like July over the summer.
Uh-huh.
And I did buy a shirt. So I'm gonna taunt you the next time I see you and wear that my Frog Brigade shirt.
Maybe I'll get one of my Christmas stocking then.
But we played at Westbury Music Hall. Have you ever been there? You know,
no.
Westbury, Long Island.
No, so I know where Old Westbury is, yep.
But it's Circle.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
The stage is in the middle, and all the seats are around you in a circle, and the stage rotates slowly. So for, like, cool. Three songs, like, you are staring at the front of the band, and three songs later, you're like, wait, we're looking at the back of the band now.
I do have to say the crowd was interesting. I think I'm into crowds now, because I'm going to I was in the crowds before, but I go to a very diverse, not diverse. I go to different shows all the time, and they're diverse in their own ways. But I went to Little Yachty, where it was a much younger crowd. I went to Jordan Davis, which was a country crowd. I'm going to, I went to the Frog Brigade, and that crowd was kind of a scary fish crowd.
Yeah, they were like they're definitely like the druggier jam band people, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And I was not nervous, but I was like, I felt like I was in Northern California again. I was like, oh, I guess I didn't think of who was going to be there. I thought it might be more like the you know, the kids who just nod their head and like very intellectual. But then I was like, of course not, because all these people are actually, it's like funk music and they're jamming and they're dancing. You know what I mean? So like it was a druggy, jammy crowd. Yeah, but it was, I was surprised somehow. I don't know what.
So nonetheless, always puts on an amazing show. I would highly recommend seeing it, even if you're not necessarily a big Primus or Les Claypool fan, because you will be.
Yeah, and speaking of 77, Animals was from 77. That was the album they covered. But every time I was typing into my browser EP77 for episode 77, I'd hit return, and by accident, it would actually show up as an EP77 digital piano by Roland. The EP77 digital piano offers an expressive 76-note weighted action keyboard and superb Roland piano. An instrument sounds at a surprisingly affordable price. Its simple, straightforward operation, built-in speakers, and onboard metronome make the EP77 perfect for musicians, students, and educators.
What way or what year did this piece of equipment come out? Is this a current
model? I think it's current, actually. I think it's current.
Oh, it's a current model. Interesting. So it's funny that you kept finding that topic, because that leads us to our usual segment, What's the Gizzard Up To? And I think we've built it up enough. Their new album, The Silver Cord, it's out. So
their
it's been
25th
out.
25th album. Yeah, Friday.
It's a little over a week. It's been out, I guess. And what's interesting about this version or this album, this version of The King Gizzard, is that it was fully electronic. So they used a lot of Roland equipment. I saw in the notes.
Yeah, Roland Juno X, the RC-505, the TR-8, to name a few. Yeah, I mean,
they, do you know what any of these numbers mean?
Yeah, you type them in a search box and you find out what they are. I mean, they're all as far as I'm sure they're all different to an electronics person, but for me, it's all the same shit. I know they do different things.
Like, it's like cars. Like I know the difference between like
a red car and a blue car.
Yeah. An A7, an A6, a Q7, an E5, whatever.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I know the number's different.
Don't you own one of those?
Sure. I think it's the, I don't know. It is one of those. I'm not that intuitive, man.
GX7?
Sure, sure. I got to say that the new Gizzard album might be my favorite album. And I'm only...
Wait, your favorite album by them or your favorite album?
Oh, favorite album by them. Yeah, I feel it's... I only listen from song 8 on. Like, I don't understand.
So just the extended version of the album?
Of course. Of course. Well, I'm going to listen to 1 to 7 when 8 to, you know, the next number, 14, is... It's so good. It makes so much more sense.
Yeah, so just this takes a 7-song album that comes in at 28 minutes with an asterisk that I'm going to get to. And then there's the extended version where every song, the first one is over 20 minutes, but every other song, 2 through 7, are between 10 and 12 plus minutes all on their own. And I found it was good music to fall asleep to be honest.
Really?
Like it was real, like... Took me on travels to dreamland.
Yeah, it didn't do that for me. I was vibing though. Yeah, I don't actually listen to music when I go to bed anymore. I can't do it. It keeps me awake.
Yeah, but this style of music though is more your jam. I remember back, of the century, you were you're cool. You're always going to the place with the badass DJs. And I'm glad to hear that King Gizzard holds up. You know. To someone with such a refined taste as you.
Thanks. Yeah, it's not dance music, though. But it is, like, strangely, it's kind of spiritual. I don't want to say trance, like trance electronic music, but it's, like, it's very cerebral. I dig it. I recommend, highly recommend, especially the first song, Thea, whatever. They're just singing over and over again. And they're very, they're very, like, a church choir in it to me.
Yeah, well, that's. I feel like with the keyboards and the organs, it just lends itself to a temple, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it was their 25th album, so I like that they tried all new things. So they're playing not their primary instrument, except for maybe if they have a keyboardist. And so I think it really pushed them to create a new type of music for them. So it's awesome. I got to say, the topics are still all the same topics, though.
Well, a lot of the lyrics are borrowed from Petro Dragonic Apocalypse. They're like doomy heavy metal album that came out in May. In fact, you'll hear them say Motor Spirit and talking about Gaia and all sorts of lyrical callbacks as well as musical callbacks, just on completely different instruments.
I like how they explained on Bandcamp, just very short notes, but about like where they recorded it, when it was recorded, how it was recorded. And by how, I mean like over two sessions and then how it was mixed, you know, this month. So it was really neat to see how it kind of evolved in a really tight time frame. It started in a January session of 23 and it came out in October.
Well, already on Instagram, I think a day or two after the album dropped, Stu put something out like, thank you so much for listening. I'm glad everybody's hearing the record. Can't wait till you hear our next one. Like, come on. I mean, it's a joke. I think it just crossed over 11 years from their first album. Or maybe it was only 10 years from their first album, but now they're up to 25. And of course,
studio albums, not like bootlegs or live shows, because people can have a lot of albums that way. These are actually built, designed as albums.
Yeah. And look, there's 25 of them now. They're all shorter than an hour long. So you're almost up to a full day of music now. This is definitely music late at night, you know, well after midnight, after party type grooves. Oh, one last thing. I said an asterisk about the shorter version of the album, the 3-minute, 4-minute versions of the songs.
Yep.
There are actually 3 hidden tracks. So each side of only on the vinyl, and the vinyl at the end of the vinyl, it goes into a lock groove. You have to manually walk over, pick the needle off the lock groove, past the lock groove. And on one side, there's one song, and on the other side, they do the same thing, and there's 2 songs on that side. Truly hidden vinyl tracks, and that's on the short version only of the silver cord.
Dude, I might get a vinyl. How much do they cost? How much does a decent one cost? Not too nice, but not shitty. How much is a record?
I mean, under $400, you can get a great turntable. But do you have a speaker and a receiver?
No. How much is that going to cost? Never mind. Yeah. Never mind.
We can talk to Santa about this.
Yeah. I got to tell you, a couple of episodes, I think I've asked when Elvis died.
So we're back to 1977, huh? With a screech, like the record has stopped.
Hey, one other famous set of deaths that year I came across during the research, but apparently Leonard Skinner, their plane crashes in 77.
Oh, so that's like when Ronnie Van Zant and all those other... Didn't a bunch of them die?
Yes, Steve Gaines, Cassie Gaines. They're all 28, 29, too. So they missed the 27 Club by a year or two.
Yeah, they didn't want to hang out with those guys anyway.
Dude, so do you think that Kanye West is Elvis Presley reincarnated?
Why did they, like, was they born and died on the same day?
Oh, no, same year. Sorry, and not even after each other. Nah.
It's not like the Dalai Lama. They have to, like, search for him because at that moment he was... Sorry.
No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. No, totally.
A little religious tangent here and a reference to a Keanu Reeves movie.
well done. All right, so 1977. You know, I had in the notes, actually, I had them originally in the epilogue as I think 1977 was the worst year for music, but listen, don't interrupt. It's because I looked at the top, like, 30, like, on Billboard, and I'm like, this shit is crap. Like, it was so bad. I mean, I like some of the songs, but I was still like, I can't believe it's all disco or whatever. And then, because it was like, it's all Bee Gees and the guy from the Bee Gees. And,
okay. Yeah, well, look, we've been trying to build up a story over the last couple of episodes that all the experimentation of the 60s and all the genres that started to break out in the 60s made the early 70s really interesting. And then kind of behemoth record companies got in there and scraped off all the rusty edges and smoothed it down to a sheen. And by 76 and certainly 77, all you're left with is like these smooth anodyne sounds. And it's just,
oh my. Yeah. Here, quick. I'm going to do a quick poem. Just reading the titles of some of the top Billboard ones. Tonight's the Night, Gonna Be All Right. Do you know who that's by? Tonight's the Night, Rod Stewart. And then it's got Andy Gibb as, I just wanted
to her Andy Gibb. Yeah.
Yeah. The Emotions, Barbra Streisand. Don't Leave Me This Way, which I do like that song by Thelma.
Weren't like the Eagles and Steely Dan big at this time. Oh, and you know, this is yacht rock coming in. Yeah, well, like
they weren't big, but the Eagles, Hotel California's that year, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there it is. At number 19, by the way, Got to Give It Up by Marvin Gaye. Oh yeah, Rich Girl, there's Hall & Oates right there. Southern Nights by Glen Campbell. Oh, you were right. You were right.
Yeah. So I think, Bill, keeping with that thesis, we've now reached the second into the third year of this kind of everything is shiny, everything's smooth, all the rough edges are hewn off. And now, bubbling underneath, you have all the new bands that are being formed by the kids that were listening to those turbulent albums that came out in the late 60s and the early 70s. You have, you know, Iggy Pop, who was inspired by Jim Morrison live at a concert. You know, he was in the Stooges in the 70s, and you know, I keep saying, you know, he was in the Stooges in the early 70s and that never gained any traction. He's now hooking up with David Bowie, and they're in the middle of a drug addiction, and essentially to get clean say, we're going to Eastern Germany so we can't, because we know we can't get drugs there, and we're going to get some work done.
That's why they went to Berlin?
Yeah, you know the story, right?
I didn't know that, but you couldn't get drugs in Berlin.
Well, I guess perhaps they didn't have the right connections at the time. It wasn't going to be easy.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't L.A., because that's where they're coming from. Yeah,
exactly. So it had gotten to be too easy, and they changed their lifestyle. And they moved in together, and in 77, between the two of them, Iggy Pop, I believe, released two albums. A record label that had rights to his earlier stuff released something, and then a live album that he recorded in 77 was released in 78, and that's kind of the middle of his career. At the same time, David Bowie releases two albums of his so-called Berlin trilogy, Low and Heroes, and both of those are all-time classics, but like Keith said, nowhere near the album charts or the top singles charts.
Not at all, because I went to my title and I typed in 1977 and I went to playlists and there was, Bowie songs, pop songs, Ramones have a song, Sex Pistols have a song, and it was much, much better. So I'm glad I didn't say 77 was a waste. But you know, Steve, I actually don't know that much about Bowie. So when you were saying you know, I actually don't know. And that's why we started this podcast. So tell me a little more about, like, he considers this his, like, the Berlin Trilogy, or he considers this where his main sound comes from. Like, why is this so classic?
All the music nerds, all the music pricks, you know,
like you,
people like us.
You. I don't know.
No, like the critical cunts and Yeti.
Sure. Okay. Good.
Are all like David Bowie Low is so great, or Heroes is so great. And they have some really good songs, like
Totally.
Sound and Vision, Always Crashing the Same Car, Be My Wife, all really good songs on Low. But then the second half is all electronic.
Instrumental, yeah.
It's all instrumental. It's very Brian Eno influenced, so very soundscapey, almost background music. And the same thing on Heroes. It's one half is that type of music, and then on the other side he's got Heroes, like an all-time classic song, which is not as uplifting as you might think given the lyrics. So he's really put out one album there, and then the extended version kind of is side two on both of those.
Yep.
At the same time, Iggy Pop has a keyboardist in his band. It's David Bowie. And David Bowie is writing songs with Iggy Pop. And they were truly a partnership at the time, a songwriting partnership. When the two of them were together, they recorded The Idiot first, then Low. And then David Bowie was getting a lot of credit for the catchiness and the songs on The Idiot by Iggy Pop. David Bowie doesn't tour for Low. He's truly behind Iggy Pop and his band. And Iggy's like, oh, great, I'm getting all these accolades, but it's based on David Bowie. So he, for his next album, which also came out in 1977, Lust for Life.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah.
So it has Lust for Life. It has Passenger.
Yeah, those are the best songs.
Yeah. So a lot of these, Iggy Pop was like not sleeping at the time because David Bowie was working so fast. He was hurrying up to finish the album before David Bowie had too much influence on it. So he could get credit for that. So you have Lust for Life. Is the third album of the group that came out in 77. And then the last one is Heroes. So really, truly fundamental, amazing albums. You don't really hear them on your typical classic rock stations and other than Heroes. And there's some really incredible work here.
Iggy was trying to get out from underneath Bowie's gaze, which is really strange. And what it was because Bowie had all these different personas before. He couldn't tour behind Lowe because he didn't have the energy to create a stage presence, but he did want to write music, which is why he worked with Pop. But what's really interesting is they were born in 1947. My dad was born in 1946. So they were 30 in 1977 when my sister was born. Who would have thunk?
Yeah.
What were you doing when you were 30? You didn't go off to Berlin to kick your drug habit and record three albums.
No, I should have, though.
Totally, I should have.
Yeah. And then what's interesting about the whole relationship and the whole songwriting partnership is China Girl, which everyone knows because of the Bowie version of that from Let's Dance in 83, I think that came out. Mm-hmm. But the original version is from The Idiot, 1977. Really? And Iggy Pop's version is the original. And, you know, David Bowie helped him write the song. They wrote it together. And he played on it on the original and toured with it. But everyone thinks of that as a David Bowie song. And yes, he was part of the original. It was released as an Iggy Pop song, though, 6 or 7 years prior to global domination.
Interesting. Bowie's always been such a fascinating person to me, and I really didn't know that much about Iggy Pop. But one thing that's stringing the ages together by doing the years per episode is Iggy Pop was at a Morrison show, you know, inspired, becomes a singer, was in the Stooges. Somehow him and David Bowie become best friends, decide when they're turning 30, it's great to go to Europe to kick their L.A. cocaine problem. They record a bunch of albums there. And then, you know, they're off to the races. That's crazy. Do you have a favorite Bowie album? Like, do any of the Berlin 3 make it there for you?
I don't think so. And the third one of the Berlin 3 is Lodger comes out actually in 79. It took for that long for that to come out. And that one, I feel like, isn't as strong as the first two. And like I said, the first two, I feel like are not full albums.
They're connected. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, I mean, Hunky Dory is probably my favorite. I like a little bit more of the psychedelic rather than the art rock side of it, of Bowie. You know, and it's cliche, but Let's Dance, top to bottom, is an amazing album.
Yeah, I should listen to more Bowie as albums, mm-hmm. like you just said. Because I'm more of a Chains Bowie fan.
Right.
For those who know,
his greatest hits album. Yeah.
Yeah, that came with your, like, 12 for one penny each from Columbia House.
Yeah. Yeah. And also Bowie's last album,
the Black one Star.
Black Star is pretty. And Seven Long. That it's a hard album to listen to, especially in the context of it coming out on his birthday, the day he died.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it, the way he kept himself alive so that he'd be alive when it was released. That's pretty awesome. Hey, thanks for telling me about Bowie. I really don't know that much about him.
So like 77 I think a turning point, because now we didn't really mention it too much underneath, you know, obviously the disco era had taken over all the pop hits and all the, you know, the shiny corporate rock. But bumbling under, you have punk rock has really started to come through. You know, we talked a little bit about the Ramones last week, Talking Heads' seminal album called Talking Heads 77, their debut with, you know, Psycho Killer and a lot of the other songs that.
Yeah, I'm just going to show you how, like, 77 sort of the end of an era and the beginning of an era. On November 30th of 77, Bing Crosby's final Christmas television special was broadcast. So he dies after that. And then...
Well, he did a duet with David Bowie. Did you know that?
For Peace on Earth, Little Drummer Boy. Dude, you are really freaking good. Okay, fine.
It is the weirdest song, by the way, too. Like, it's hard. it's uncomfortable. Like, I've seen the video, and I think David might have still been on some drugs at that time.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And it was uncomfortable to watch. And it's not a good song.
No, that's November 30th. December 14th, Saturday Night Fever appears in the movie theaters, right? So that ignites a new popularity for disco music. You know, and who was the soundtrack by?
The Bee Gees, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, yeah. You, I'm bringing you to trivia night for music. Okay, last thing I want to say, December 17th. This is when Elvis Costello makes his American television debut on Saturday Night Live as a last-minute replacement for the Sex Pistols, who were refused visas to enter America. Very, very good. So that's how the year ends. So basically, Bing Crosby's dead. Saturday Night Fever's, like, disco's jumped the shark because it's now a movie already. And Elvis Costello, like, the underground with the Sex Pistols can't get into the country. And they're supposed to be Saturday Night Live. And Saturday Night Live was crazy then. And Elvis Costello. Yeah. So it's happening, man. Your thesis is right. And you didn't actually have it planned before we started.
I didn't. It's been developing away. And, you know, you see everything comes in ebbs and flows.
Well, thank you for coming with us on a journey of 1977 where things are just beginning to get a little crazy.
I would walk 1977 miles. Thanks for listening to New Dad Rock. We rock. So you rock. Rock too.